The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
In one of our three episodes covering the arrest of Glenn Samuel McCurley for the murder of Carla Walker back in late September of 2020, we spoke with Othram Incorporated CEO David Middleman. He walked us through what led to the man's identification as a suspect. On June 24th and July 11th of this year, 2021, we released episodes covering the pretrial motions filed by the accused's defense, most of which concerned the attempt to suppress DNA evidence and exclude McCurley's two confessions, the one he gave Detectives Leah Wagner and Jeff Bennett, and the one he gave KRLD news reporter Andrew Greenstein. We suggest listening to those episodes if you have not already, as I don't have a ton of time to go over the day's proceedings in as great detail as I did day one. Those pretrial motions to suppress were denied, and on the second day of the State of Texas versus Glenn Samuel McCurley, the court heard testimony from the folks who did the forensic work on the reopened case and the Fort Worth detective's videoed interview with McCurley in which the man confessed. Here's the rundown of day two. After Judge Elizabeth Beach and the jurors entered, the courtroom was seated. John Fondon, lab director at Othram Incorporated, took the stand first. Assistant Criminal District Attorney Kim Davignon interviewed the witness. After describing his credentials to the court, which includes many years on the Human Genome Project, he explained what DNA is, how the technologies are always evolving, and finally, the difference between what Othram does compared to traditional STR DNA work, which is the current and longtime standard in law enforcement investigations. STR is what the FBI's Combined DNA Indexing System, or CODIS, uses. It's used to match two DNA profiles using 20-ish markers. The technology Othram uses, on the other hand, called shotgun sequencing, analyzes tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of markers across a given genome, far more than STR technology. It is used to more accurately determine the amount of the genome folks share than the standard. Fondon testified that the technology can be used to identify and estimate relatedness. Genome shotgun sequencing technology includes the data being loaded into a kit and put through the GEDmatch database, in this case, a site regular folks use for genealogical research, but can also choose to opt in if they wish to allow law enforcement to use their data for criminal investigations or identifying unknown decedents. This is how it went down with Carla Walker's case after Othram received evidence in June 2020, Fondon testified. State Exhibits 56 through 59, photographs Othram took documenting, receiving, and opening the package, were allowed into evidence. A lot of work came next, building libraries, Fondon said, of short sequences until he was able to identify two surnames, Alexander and McCurley. Fondon worked overnight beginning on July 3, 2020, and was able to identify a set of brothers with the McCurley surname who shared the most relatedness with the evidence the lab was provided. He called Othram CEO David Middleman with the news, and at around 9 a.m. on July 4th, they were on a three-way call with Fort Worth Police Cold Case Homicide Detective Jeff Bennett. We'll get back to that in Bennett's testimony. The witness was turned over to the defense for cross-examination. As he did in his attempts at pretrial, defense attorney Stephen Meyer attempted to discredit John Fondon because he and others at Othram who performed work on evidence in the Carla Walker case were not accredited by the Texas Forensic Science Commission. Fondon readily admitted that he was not accredited, and that's addressed on redirect by the state, as it was at pretrial. But before redirect, defense asked Fondon if he would handle different pieces of evidence on the same table and using the same gloves. The scientist said he would not do such a thing. On redirect, Prosecutor Davignon asked Fondon if accreditation by the Texas Forensic Science Commission is even available for the work that Othram does, this genome shotgun sequencing. The answer was no. The technology is brand new, and even without accreditation, law enforcement agencies all over Texas, including the Texas Rangers and the FBI, utilize the technology regularly. Fondon testified that accreditation standards are being developed and written at this moment, and in fact, he is helping with the process. The state called their next witness. Christian Williams took the stand and was sworn in. He was a bit of a surprise since he was not sworn in at the beginning of the day's proceedings like the other witnesses. Williams left the Fort Worth police in December of 2020, he said, after working for the department in crime scene for the prior 10 years. Prosecutor Emily Dixon pored over a series of questions that detailed his involvement in Carla Walker's murder case. Williams assisted Detectives Wagner and Bennett as far as preserving and protecting some of the physical evidence. While swabbing items inside the trash collected from the curb of Glenn Samuel McCurley's Fort Worth home, Williams explained he chose those items based on which had the most potential for DNA profile development. He was looking for items like cigarette butts, beverage containers, or straws, since saliva yields high quality and a large quantity of DNA. Williams swabbed the McDonald's straws found in the trash. They were sent out, analyzed, and matched McCurley's DNA to the DNA found on the right side of Carla's bra. The witness identified the photographs of the McCurley trash and the sealed bags that contained his initials, badge number, and the report number. The defense passed on cross-examining Christian Williams, and he was dismissed. Next, Mallory Pagenkopf was called to the stand. Pagenkopf is a forensic biologist from Serological Research Institute, or SERI, in Richmond, California. She detailed her education and credentials, which included her employment at the United States Armed Forces for the American Registry of Pathology, where she worked to identify deceased service members. For the past 3 years, Pagenkopf has worked for SERI as a forensic serologist and DNA analyst. Serology is the scientific study of bodily fluids, to put it simply. Pagenkopf described for Prosecutor Kim Davignon and the rest of the court the STR DNA analysis and how it is determined if a piece of evidence contains a single source of DNA or a mixture. She also went over the careful steps and procedures she takes to assure evidence isn't cross-contaminated and is labeled and documented painstakingly. No two people, Pagenkopf said, share the exact same DNA. I don't have time to do her testimony justice, just like I did not have time to do John Fondon's testimony justice. Hopefully we can explore both when I can sit down and chat with a guy I know who is an expert on all things DNA in the near future. I'll try and make that happen, I promise. Both testimonies were incredibly interesting and well done. Anyway, Pagenkopf described how she looks over evidence for areas that potentially have DNA, using an alternative light source if she cannot identify an area under normal conditions. Blood and touch DNA will not fluoresce, she explained, but semen does, to provide the relevant example here. At Serological Research Institute, Pagenkopf received 21 items from the Fort Worth police on November 20, 2019, she explained. These items were from the Carla Walker murder case and arrived sealed, with no concerns as far as procedure to protect and preserve the items. Using an alternative light source, Pagenkopf identified two separate stains on the right side of Carla's bra. From the stains, which were determined to be semen by Pagenkopf, a serologist, she developed the same DNA profile. The profile was named Unidentified Male 1. It was uploaded into CODIS via the San Mateo County, California Sheriff's Office, since independent non-law enforcement labs cannot access the FBI's database. It got no hits. Months later, however, Pagenkopf received another package from the Fort Worth police containing two sets of swabs. The scientist was to compare the swabs against the profile she developed from the two sources of stains on Carla Walker's bra. The profile from the swabs matched the unknown male 1 profile from the bra. In fact, the way I understood it, the chances the swab profile and the first source from the bra, which was single source, weren't an exact match was 1 in 48 octillion. That's 27 zeros. It was a 1 in 21 octillion chance for the swabs and the second profile source from the bra, which was multiple source, the other sources too weak to interpret. The source of the profile on the swabs was the trash collected from Glenn Samuel McCurley's curb. The other evidence Pagenkopf tested was discussed, some also with a high probability of matching McCurley, namely a stain on Carla's dress, but other evidence not so much. On cross-examination, defense attorney Stephen Meyer attempted first to lessen Pagenkopf's authority on the subject of forensic DNA at best, or attempted to call her a liar at worst. Because identical twins share the same DNA profile, which Pagenkopf failed to point out when asked by the state, Meyer asked the witness if people sometimes make mistakes. She replied, yes. Most of the defense's questions centered around another fully qualified DNA analyst at SERI, the state would later make clear on redirect. This analyst placed the already created DNA extract into a well plate and then into a real-time PCR machine, which was used to detect specific genetic material and estimate how much DNA is present. It was the only work this SERI employee performed on the Carla Walker evidence, which was not analysis. Still, because she is not accredited in Texas, Pagenkopf, by the way, is, the defense suggested the entire testing was not valid in the state. McCurley's attorney played off a question that prosecutor Kim Davignon had asked the witness earlier. Pagenkopf had agreed with the state that hair match analysis was bad science, and Meyer suggested that perhaps forensic DNA testing might also one day be considered junk science. The defense then questioned the use of statistics in this case, since the witness was not a statistician and had to be told the stats by one of them blasted newfangled gadgets called computers. The statistics, Pagenkopf corrected Meyer, were calculated by the software. Kim Davignon, upon redirect, established that all labs and agencies use such statistic computing software. Pagenkopf was dismissed. The next witness was Detective Jeff Bennett. When Fort Worth cold case homicide detective Jeff Bennett took the stand, he told the court about his role in the department and his role as Detective Wagner's partner. Bennett has been with the Fort Worth police for 23 years. He described coming onto cold cases in January 2019 and beginning work on Carla's case shortly thereafter. It was an extensive undertaking, Bennett said, an incredible amount of files and evidence to comb through. Instead of accepting prior persons of interest who'd been cleared by past detectives who had worked the case, and there have been many, Bennett explained that every individual ever mentioned, cleared or not, was back on his list. This included, he said, Carla's boyfriend, Rodney McCoy. This is where I discovered I spoke too soon last episode. It appears that prior detectives might have actually considered McCurley cleared. My apologies to the defense for calling their claim misleading. Regardless, he was back on these detectives' list of folks to be eliminated or further investigated. Like the witness before him, Bennett agreed that hair analysis was junk science, though not when distinguishing animal hair from human hair. The hair found on the barbed wire fence near the cattle culvert where Carla Walker's body was found, Detective Bennett said, was not human. Bennett said he and Wagner collected DNA swabs from a lot of folks and interviewed dozens of Carla's friends and witnesses. When NBC Universal paid to have testing done on evidence in the case, Jeff Bennett was optimistic, he said, but his hopes were dashed when the DNA profile got no CODIS hit. After hitting the pavement for even more boots-on-the-ground detective work, Bennett finally got in touch with Othram. Y'all know the rest. When he got the 9 a.m. July 4th call from Othram's David Middleman and John Fonden, and they said the name McCurley, Bennett said he was overcome with emotion. He was hearing something, he said, that detectives had been waiting to hear for 46 years. It wouldn't happen to be Glenn Samuel McCurk was all Bennett could get out before the defense objected. It was sustained. Again, y'all know what follows here. The trash collection, the match between the trash and the stain on Carla's bra, detectives getting a voluntary swab from McCurley, which also was a match, and the arrest. The state then introduced the interview video that was recorded just after the accused was taken into custody. It was allowed into evidence with, quote, no additional objections, the additional, of course, referring to the pretrial motions to suppress. It was subsequently played for the court. In the video, while waiting several minutes for Detectives Wagner and Bennett to arrive, McCurley is shown sitting in a small interview room. When they do arrive, Wagner slides a photograph of Carla Walker over to the man, and he denies ever having seen the girl. His rights are read, and it is repeatedly asked if he understands and is willing to waive his rights and talk. And other than saying, I guess, at one point, he avoids specifically saying he does or signing the waiver. But he never refuses to talk. In fact, he just keeps talking. At the pretrial, the judge allowed the confession video to be presented at trial because of this. Considering the totality of the circumstances is how Judge Beach put it. The accused never stopped and never requested counsel. Eventually, after explaining that they had the evidence that proved McCurley raped and killed Carla, and because he'd mistakenly left her boyfriend Rodney McCoy, a witness, alive, at 2:15 p.m. on Monday, September 21st, 2020, Glenn Samuel McCurley began sobbing and confessed. Well, in a bullshit way, trying to lessen the severity of his monstrous act. He'd been out driving around and drinking whiskey and beer since it was still daylight, he told the detectives, and at some point parked in the parking lot of the Ridgely Brunswick Bull when he heard the screams of a damsel in distress. He heroically saved the little girl from a car where a guy was roughing her up. McCurley put her in his car, he said. She thanked him and hugged him for saving the day, and they had sex. Scared she'd tell his wife, he choked the little girl, he said. He continually denied raping Carla, even when confronted by detectives that they had evidence he did, and continually denied having his .22 Ruger that night. The guy roughing up Carla in the car, the accused said the girl told him, wanted to do something she didn't want to do. Detective Bennett pointed out that no one will believe Carla wouldn't have sex with her boyfriend, but would have sex with him, a stranger. He also questioned McCurley's fear that she would tell his wife. They didn't know each other. Carla certainly did not know who this man's wife was. How would she tell? McCurley is 6'3" tall and probably weighed 250 pounds at the time. Detective Wagner points out, Carla was 4'11" tall, probably about 95 pounds. Still, McCurley only eventually says, "I guess I did," one of the many times he's asked if he raped Carla. He didn't remember any bad part, he said. "I didn't get rough with her, I don't think. Except choking her, I guess." At another point, he says he choked her, but she was still alive when he dropped her off next to some bushes against a building somewhere. I didn't fully understand where he was talking about. Presumably, he meant the Ridgely bowling alley. He also claimed Rodney drove out of the parking lot shortly after he saved Carla. She was still breathing, he told detectives, and was standing. He protected his trophy, the .22 caliber Ruger, for a majority of the interview, until 3:45 p.m. that day, when he finally told detectives it was behind paneling in a storage room he built in his house, wrapped in a towel the color of which he couldn't say. "I've got pages of quotes from this interview written in my notebook, all sickening attempts to hide the truth of this depraved act, in hopes he'll not appear a complete monster. But it's late, and I'm running out of time. But I will say this, at one point the man said, 'I'm guilty.'" The state introduced a ton of photos the cops took while executing the warrant on the McCurley home. The photos depicted their trip through the man's laundry room and into his self-built storage room where the gun was hidden, in the rafters where he said it would be wrapped. It was in a white towel. Then a magazine for the gun and the gun itself, the elusive pistol used to bludgeon Rodney McCoy and likely to keep Carla in fear for her life, were admitted into evidence and shown to the jury. Upon cross-examination, the defense clarified with Detective Jeff Bennett that they knew McCurley had diabetes and cancer. They asked Bennett to admit McCurley was confused and didn't understand his rights. The detective replied, "I wouldn't call it confused." Earlier, Detective Bennett said that the accused repeated details that matched the known facts of the crime. The defense closed their cross-examination by asking him if those details had ever been published in the paper or heard on podcasts. "Yes," he answered. On redirect, the state established that Glenn Samuel McCurley never once attempted to terminate the interview. "While I believe the trial is going well and looks good for the state, please continue to keep the Walker family and Rodney McCoy in your thoughts as this trial progresses. They're a stoic bunch, but this is hard on them." Thanks, Diane, for helping me out with the notes. I do not know if I will be able to get an episode out tomorrow night covering the third day of trial. I'll do my best. If I can't, I'll do a quick summary the following day. Thanks for listening, y'all.